again, everybody, and welcome to another episode of BitNote. I've got a great selection of video game music tracks, so I hope you stick around and enjoy them. Have a listen. Alright, so to start things up, I'll hit you up with an energetic track. Now, when a lot of people think of video games, they think, oh, this game's where you just go around and shoot stuff. Well, to start things off, let's break that trend by playing music from a game where you go around and shoot stuff. This is music from Sign Mora. That, my friends, was Moneta Point C from the video game Sign Mora, which was developed by Grasshopper Manufacturer and Digital Reality, and the music was composed by Akira Yamaoka. So, Sign Mora is basically, as I said, a game where you go around shooting stuff. It's like those classic games like Ur-Type, where you got your little craft on the left of the screen and you move them up, down, left and right, and then shoot bullets to the right, and then a lot of enemies come from the right of the screen and you end up shooting them. You'd think that it'd be a spaceship game, but actually this is a whole game in an airplane, and indeed airplanes that tend to go underwater as well. The game is very frantic with incredibly vivid and impressively realized landscapes, and it just takes place in a completely other world that seems very much inspired by a sort of Second World War, you know, petrol heads, diesel, motors, propellers and everything like that, but I've obviously taken into the future, so you've got basically floating cities and great big weapons and gigantic machine and everything. The music you just heard there was from, as I said, Moneta Point C, which is essentially where you're part of this team that's trying to rescue all these people or gather information about all these people that have gone missing, and essentially that music plays when you're fighting a gigantic train. Yes. Oh boy. This game, you think that this game is all about just shooting objects that come from the right of the screen? This game has gigantic creatures, behemoths, great big structural things. You know those great big like digger machines that have the spinny thing, and you know, basically one of those starts standing up on hind legs and attacking you. You've gigantic like robots that attack you. You've got oil rigs that attack you. And in this case, you've got a gigantic train that attacks you. And instead of just going to the front of the train and just screwing it off there, you have to fight, shoot your way through from the back of the train to the front, destroying all the turrets, the emplacement, an entire what looks like a hangar, you know, like an aircraft carrier just stuck on one of the carriages of the train, and even another part that looks like some sort of like Victorian a sort of housing establishment stuck on one of the four carriers, and then the chimneys come off and start shooting stuff at you. So this is a game, as I've said, like in many games, where everything's trying to kill you and you shoot your way forward. So what are you doing in this great big crazy world? Well, that's kind of the problem. It's very hard to figure out. But before I get talking into plots, I'm going to hit you with another track that's one of my favorite from the game. I mentioned, I think even on the first show, that I didn't even realize that Evil Genius had such a great music track until I paused on the title screen and let the tune continue on and realized how it developed. It's kind of a thing with video games that happens, but the same thing happened with Sign Mora when I was on the bonus screen. I got the high score, and normally I'm anxious to press down the button to move on to the next screen and get on to the next level, but before I did, I just got distracted for a second, and I realized, wait a sec, the music that plays during the score screen is actually really, really damn good. So I'm going to play that for you now. And as I said, that was High Score. That was from Sign Mora, and Akira Yamaoka does compose some great music. He's probably more widely known for his work on Silent Hill, which of course is that great big survival horror franchise that's very popular. But right now he's working in a Grasshopper manufacturer, who's basically a Japanese studio that's basically known for making a lot of crazy titles and being headed by a guy named Suda51. It was a co-production with Digital Reality, which is actually a Hungarian studio that have done a lot of work. And it actually, the Hungarian aspect comes across as the game. You see, all of the actors have voices in there. So there's a lot of voice acting for the characters. But when I listened to them, while of course I got subtitles and text for everything, I couldn't actually understand what they were saying. So I figured, I know, this is probably one of those fake, you know, made-upy languages. And it's very common in video games. Klonoa, of course, had a made-upy language. Rayman as well, that was a French game. Quite a few other games as well. I figure it's because, you know, they develop it in a certain language and they figure, look, we're going to have to port the voice acting to English anyway, and that's going to be a pain, so let's just make it a complete fantasy language, and that way we just have to update all the text and don't have to hire in a new set of voice actors. So I assumed that that's what happened, until I discovered that all the voice actors were actually speaking Hungarian. Yes, this is the only video game I've ever played that has the entire original voice track be in Hungarian. Apparently, the Japanese developers listened to the voice acting and said, hey, this sounds really, really good. Let's just keep it like this and just let the text actually let people know what's going on. And as crazy as that sounds, it works. I really do like the voice actors, even though I have to read text to understand what they're saying. I mean, there's this posh, snooty one who looks down on everyone, and you can hear the disdain and clicked voice tone in her voice, and then you've got the grumpled, you know, war-torn person who's cynical and, you know, vicious and just, like, you know, looks down on everyone and just can't really see out of his own anger and frustration. And then you've got the peppy, kid, you know, the guy's son who's like optimistic and a bit cocksure and going, yeah, don't worry, totally got that. And then later on when he develops a little more, you can see how he takes on a slightly more severe tone of voice and how he's not just the lackadaisy kid he was always. So it just worked really well, and I kind of really enjoyed it. And like I said, the sound works pretty well. And I did listen to a trailer which did actually have part of that voice translated into English, and yeah, I think I'll support the Hungarians on this one, definitely. I could mention some stuff about this game's plot, but I will say this. It involves time travel. You don't always see where things are time traveling. And as I kept replaying the game, trying to shoot everything, I made an extra game out of trying to see if I could understand the actual plot. It is actually worth understanding, and there are a lot of hints you can pick up from here and there to help assemble a more than a basic knowledge of the plot, but it is kind of confusing, and it's made completely more confusing by the fact that it has its own time system. Every mission, the date and time of every mission pops up, but it's not in like years or anything. It's in a fantasy system involving like things called circles, and it took me quite a while to realize that maybe the circles were actually counting down as time went on rather than up as in any conventional system. And in that case, what are they counting down to? As I say, when I played the games, things became slightly less unclear. And indeed, it was helped by the fact that if you'd managed to complete the game in a good setting, you actually get an encyclopedia that helps explain a lot of the actual backstory and a lot of the actual part of the plot of the game that you didn't understand up to that point. And then get to replay the game using more alternate that hopefully fills in the gaps and hopefully doesn't make things even more confusing. But enough of that now. I think I'll move on to the next game, but first of all, I think I'll play just one more quick track from Sinemora. This is Cardinal Canyon B. By the way, did I mention that all the characters in this game are either animals, except in one case where it's a robot? Yeah, they're all like anthropomorphic animals, and you know, there's a whole lot of, the storyline does involve a lot of crazy stuff, and yeah, kind of weird stuff, but have a listen in any event. We'll be right back. And that was Cardinal Canyon B by Akira Yamaoke from Sign Mora by Digital Reality and Grasshopper Manufacture. So, I go from that game to another game that's also got a bit of Japanese in it, and that is the classic Gravity Rush. Now, if you don't know of Gravity Rush, it's an exclusive game for the PS Vita, that's Sony's most recent handheld console, and it was surprisingly pretty damn good. There's a lot of great stuff developed by it. And why don't I just play one of my favorite tracks from that game? It's called The Pleasure Quarter, and that's because it takes place in a, well, use your imagination. That, as I said, was from Gravity Rush. The game was developed by Project Siren, which is a Sony Computer Entertainment Japanese studio, and the music was composed by Kohei Tanaka, who's also done a lot of music for a lot of Japanese TV shows and other related stuff. So, Gravity Rush is quite a game. I wasn't sure what to expect. It sounded like kind of like an indie game, but when I started it, it seemed to play more like a very story-based game. We get this very nice thing of an apple falling from a tree, and then it rolls through this strange and interesting city that seems kind of Victorian and also steampunk, and then it ends up right by this girl who wakes up in a playground that seems abandoned and discovers that she suffers from standard video game protagonist amnesia syndrome, and so therefore can't remember who she is, where she came from, or anything else. She ends up going to the surface and go up all these stairs through crooked passageways and discovers that the city that she's ended up in is being attacked by a really crazy vortex that are sending all these crazy creatures. And it's around that point that she discovers that this cat, who she's never seen before and is now following her around, has given her the power to manipulate gravity. So very nice pet to have there. Oh, and by the way, the cat ends up giving her a name because she ends up having the name actually Cat. So the game starts with her discovering she can manipulate gravity, running up, trying to do a rescue, and then basically find this great big ongoing story as she explores the world she's in. It plays a little more like those open world games like Grand Theft Auto, where you get to run around this great big open city, and as the game progresses, more areas open up. And indeed, that's kind of what happens. You explore this great big city. And the fun thing about this city, it's not just any city on a landmass. No, imagine this gigantic pillar going through the sky. Now imagine it's so big that if you're at one point in the pillar, if you look up, you can only see cloud and don't know where it goes up to. And if you look down, you can only see more cloud and have no idea where it goes down to. Not knowing how high up you are or where you are, but knowing that that's where you are. Now imagine gigantic wrought iron struts pushing out from four different sides of the pillar, right out into the air, and imagine that on top of each strut is a gigantic built-up city section. I mean, that's it. This is it. It's one step away from basically floating island city here. Four gigantic sections on struts that basically each have their own theme, and you are able to explore it. You can jump, you can fly. Well, you can't really fly, but you can jump, walk around, just walk around the city as a normal person. Or you can suddenly realize, wait a sec, I've got gravity manipulation powers. And so you can just shift the gravity and then suddenly walk on the side of a building. Then walk all the way up the side of the building and look around and then maybe drop down the side, which leads you onto another thing. Or you can just reverse the gravity till you go right up into the air and then just... So you're flying up into the air, then you stop yourself and you look around the city and say, okay, I want to go in that direction. So you change gravity, so now you're falling in that direction. So you don't really fly, you're more falling with style, so to speak, or more to the point, you're deciding exactly which direction you can fall in. And boy, this city, it's kind of like, it's a bit of like, you know, the standard like steampunk and stuff, but also they got televisions and stuff, so it's a little like Sinmora, which I just talked about. It's kind of like got some old nostalgia things, but it's extended into the future, so everything's futuristic, and you got flying machines and absolutely everything. A lot of the art and style of the city was inspired by French graphic novels, such as those done by Mobius. He's a very well-known French comic artist. And to be honest, actually, French comics totally don't get enough credit when it comes to shaping our modern view of science fiction. I mean, many even recent big Hollywood movies like Blade Runner and, of course, The Fifth Element, most blatantly, all took inspiration from these French comic things. And even like movies like Heavy Metal, which sort of came from it. So, I mean, the French, even in Gravity Rush, there are many different cutscenes where it's played a little like a comic strip out of one of Mobius's things. Now, that's nothing new in games. There was, of course, Max Payne, which realized that it was a lot easier to make cutscenes if they were pretended like comics, because then they could easily reshoot things and shuffle them around. But there you go. They decided to take it another step further and make it really bit about, you know, going around and exploring this great big city like you're in a great big adventure. Before I hold you any further, why don't I hit you with another track? This is a very beautiful track, and I'll just leave it for you. It's called The Discovery of Gravitation, and as I said, it's by the same composer, Kohiki Tanaka. Thank you. So that's a great feeling of wonder from that track. There's a lot of great things. There's adventure and there's action and a lot of great other stuff about it. There's actually a fair bit that's in common between this game and Sign Mora, now that I mention it. They're both playable on the PS Vita. One of the guys that really imagined this was Kietro Toyama, who of course also played a pivotal role in the Silent Hill game. So both Silent Hill plays a role in both those games. But there's one other thing that should bring their similarity as well. I mentioned earlier that I thought Sign Mora had a make-yuppie language. Well, Gravity Rush actually does have a make-yuppie language, both voice and in writing. And in fact, if you look online, there's a really interesting article about a guy who really tried to decode the language and realized that it's not so much has make-yuppie is just completely random, but there is enough of a pattern that will allow him to try to decode it. And what did he find if he decoded it? It was kind of actually a lot of interesting bits, but it was a good thing, all right. Well, it's time to leave you now. I hope I've played some great games and music that tracks that you really, really like. And I'll leave you off with Dushinu Dakara, and that's also, I think, in its make up your language, also from Gravity Rush, and it plays during the credits, so it's a good track to play to sign off on. This has been David Collins with BitNote. Thank you for listening.